And now it's time for wait a minute. What the hell is the show called again?
It's Chatter on Books. What else do you want me to say? Can I go now?
That's right. It's Chatter on Books. Let's do this thing.
We're back. Hey, guys, it is Chatter on Books. We are back from our summer hiatus. It is so much fun to see everybody. We are coming from the undisclosed location. The bartender was here for a minute, and then he said he had to leave. So we're on our own to fill our glasses.
Yeah, he was going out to get drinks.
Exactly. And that's Jeannie, and that's David. And Michael Kornheiser, we think, is on his way. But Liz Clark nicely stopped by. I think she knew we were going to have a little gap at the table. And Liz Clark, superstar journalist and Beagle lover and Springsteen lover. And author of a fabulous book we're going to talk about next week, One Hell of a Ride.
Yes,
and Liz Clark is here, which is great.
That's correct.
Excellent. We've all been there. It's better you're here a week early than you're here a week late.
That is true.
Right?
That is true. This is just how excited I am.
Yeah.
To be with you all.
And
even though I'm not supposed to be here, but I am having snacks, and I'm just like so happy to see you.
Yeah, and this is good because Zach Powers, our author of First Cosmic Velocity, who is going to be with us this evening, is going to be reaching us via phone because he got caught up in Dorian and some other things and is down south where he's from. Mm-hmm. So this is great because we need some chairs filled, Liz, so thank you.
Okay.
How did you know? A little ESP. So we do have some great stuff on tap. I got some random thoughts. We have to talk about Handmaid's Tale. We just have to. And the fact that the sequel is now out. Ron Charles' piece about Amazon.
I read that. It was very funny.
Accidentally releasing it earlier. Yeah. It was pretty funny. Jeannie's going to walk us through what's with all the classics on the bestsellers list. And she talked me off my ledge of hating the bestseller list. And then we'll talk to Zach. And Deserted Island's going to take a different turn tonight, in which we're going to talk about celebrities reading classics so I can tell my story of being in Scotland and seeing Eddie Izzard. He was a great comedian. Do you guys know Eddie Izzard?
Yes.
Best executive transvestite.
Was he wearing a dress?
He was wearing the nicest kilt and a little Chanel-looking jacket. It was lovely. Very understated. It was nice. Very executive. Stop by Calvert Woodley today. Michael Sands is home. He works on the catalog. Evidently, this is a big part of running a wine and liquor store, working on the catalog, and he has to do that from home. But Steve took care of us. And we're already through a bottle and a half. We didn't even start the show. We're already through a bottle and a half.
Steve Sands was in the liquor store?
No.
Steve.
Right. Steve helped out. Oh, now, okay. Steve, if you've been to Calvert Woodley at 4339 Connecticut Avenue, Steve is usually very quiet, very professional, very understated when he talks about the wines. Bye, bartender. And he was effusive about this one. And, of course, I will mispronounce it, but it is Bozzetta di Exopta. It is a lovely Grenache blend from Spain, which I thought was great in honor of Nadal last night, Spaniard. That unbelievable freaking performance by him and the Russian. Yeah. Fortunately, they don't have too many Russian wines at Calvert Woodley, so we had to go with Spain. But it's really good. And La Cheeserie, they gave us this cheese, which I think if Michael shows up, he will like. And Idiazabal, I swear to God, that's how they pronounce it. Idiazabal, a little smoky. It's sheep's milk from the Basque Country. So those are good.
Everything's good.
Yeah, really good. The snacks. Do you like the watermelons?
I love
the watermelon.
Desperately hanging on to summer. Okay, so we have a little of excuse our dust as we are retooling and reworking some things with Chatter on Books. We're going to make some changes. We're going to make some more going forward. Have to say thank you to Claire and her Facebook community group.
She's great.
And her pals who have been very helpful. I ping them with questions. They come back with ideas. They try to be really nice. And then they say, no, we really hated that segment. So certain things will not be coming back. But thank you. And we'll be making changes going forward. A little bit of news from the Crazy Town front. And Jeannie, I didn't tell you about this, but I'm going to make you explain this to us. Because last week, as I was getting ready to come back with the show, a Catholic school removed Harry Potter books from its library, warning that readers, quote, risk conjuring evil spirits. Uh-oh. This is a Nashville school. The Reverend Dan Rehill turned to several exorcists for advice. I just want to stop right there. There actually are exorcists?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Get out.
Yes. Well, this reminds me of the play and then the movie Grace, in which a young nun is chastised by Mother Superior, who was played by Cherry Adams on Broadway and by Meryl Streep in the movie,
right,
because she had the children singing Frosty the Snowman, which was about, you know, a snowman who came to life and like how spiritual that was, and how, you know, that was magic and that should not be sung about. So this fits right into that category.
Yeah.
The children are supposed to not have any fantasies or...
These books, the Harry Potter books, this is a quote, present magic as both good and evil, which is not true, but in fact a clever deception. The curses and spells used in the books are actual curses and spells. Who knew that? Mm. Which, when read by a human being, risk conjuring evil spirits into the presence of the person reading the text.
Come on.
This is someone who is responsible for the upbringing of small minds in Nashville.
Yeah.
Move from the school kids.
You know, if that were true, there'd be a whole lot of nasty adults going into that book and saying those curses to kind of take care of business.
And now they will be.
Playing the billy goat curse for the Cubs.
J.K. Rowling just sold a few more books in Nashville.
Yeah. Too bad. Nashville's a heck of a town. I love Nashville.
Nashville is a great town. You know, Jingle Fest 2020 is in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seriously considering.
Yes.
Gaithersburg is a stretch for me, but Nashville.
I actually like Nashville a lot.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
We might do a special chatter on books if we're still alive then.
If you come, I'll go.
Okay. On it.
If you go, I'll go.
There we go.
Road trip.
This is my perennial day.
We've had some fabulous outings. I do like Nashville.
I like Nashville.
Some memorable times in Nashville. Mm-hmm.
It's a great town. We begged all three of our kids to apply to school there, to Vanderbilt.
Oh, Nashville.
Only one did. Charlie, youngest one, and he refused to go. Nope. Yeah. Michigan. Where they're...
No,
they're,
did he get accepted?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, should have gone to
exactly. Okay. That makes me think of football, which makes me think of the NFL, which makes me think of Andrew Luck, who several weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago, Andrew Luck's people very nicely responded to my emails and said, oh, yeah, we'll bring it up. They were very positive in the notion of Andrew Luck calling into this show and talking about his book club. He has a wonderful book club. He recommends 2 books a month, The Rookie and The Veteran Book, and they're always really good books, and he talks about them. It's wonderful. So I thought, oh, this is great. We're going to have Andrew Luck on. And then they stopped responding to the emails, and things got really quiet. But I'm thinking now he has even more time.
You should have him on.
Andrew Luck is still welcome, even if he's not playing football.
Did I tell you that I talked to Sean Doolittle?
No. Did you give him a hard time?
No. I said, you know, we would love to have you anytime. And he said, I'd love to be on.
He, too, is probably going to have a lot of free time pretty soon.
Wow. You have a little faith.
Okay, David, as long as you're talking, you have news. You have news.
Yeah. What's
give us your news about your podcast, which cannot take away from this one.
Yes, because everybody over 18 is constitutionally mandated to have a podcast.
That's right.
And a blog.
For some reason, the people at The Athletic have decided to give me one. So I'm doing a podcast now. It's called Hoops, Adjacent.
The comma is important.
The comma is very important.
Because?
I went on this soliloquy at the end of the first pilot episode, and it'll probably be the last episode. I wanted the title of the show to reflect the sensibility of the show. Mm-hmm. And that is simply that if I just talk about basketball, it won't end well for me.
6 weeks.
Oh, God, less than that. I'll be bored out of my mind if we just talk about basketball all the time. I mean, I love basketball. I love the NBA. But I want to talk about other things. That's why I do this show. That's why I do Tony's show, because we get to talk about other stuff besides basketball.
I feed you better than Tony does.
You sure do. So the comma is important. And I spent way too much time probably on the pilot episode talking about the comma, the stupid comma. But the comma is my life. The comma is my life.
Is that going to be the title of your book?
Actually, that's a very good title.
Right?
Working title, The Comma is My Life. I love that. It's a great idea. The comma is everything. The comma is, why did you go to a Catholic high school when you aren't Catholic? Why did you go to a predominantly white college when you're African American?
Like, what's up with that?
You know,
buddy?
Why are you married to a white person and raising mixed race children? Why do you still live in the district? Why are you politically the way you are? Why are you bored out of your mind sometimes by your job? Why are you fascinated by the idea of gentrification and how your city, the city that you grew up in, that you loved as a child, is gone? It's never coming back. So that's all the comma. The comma, that's all of it.
That would sustain it for show.
Yeah, I think so. I think it could be interesting, you know?
You and I have talked about this a lot off air and just wandering around and drinking too much.
That's my hobby.
I think so many people are like me, or like my daughter, Devin, in which we're amateur sports fans. Mm-hmm. Amateur sports. So we really only need a tiny amount of the breakdown of what actually happened in the basketball game last night, but we love hearing the backstories, and we love hearing about what that player's life was like because he came from Romania. And we love everything that goes around the kernel of the sports story, and I think you bring a lot of that to what you do. So I hope that's on the show.
Unfortunately, I still believe that people are inherently interesting. So I love talking to people from different backgrounds than mine. I know my background. I'm an expert on me. I want to talk to people I'm not an expert about, you know. Yeah. So hopefully that's what the podcast will be. But it's going to be a lot of basketball because I get it.
I
spent 30 years covering basketball. I have a certain amount of expertise in that realm, and I understand that people want to listen to that. So that there'll be some of that in there, but...
When are you going to pull the big card and have my future trophy husband, Steve Kerr?
Oh, my God.
And can I just be in your studio listening while you're talking to him?
You know, yes.
Okay, thank you.
In fact, when they come to Washington, maybe we'll have him in studio. We'll have him live and you can...
Sit in the back. I told you
he was very...
Church mouse.
He was a little freaked out.
I would be too.
He knows.
There's some crazy old lady from Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Oh, weird. I said your future wife really loves listening to you, and he was like, really?
No, one of the many reasons I'm fascinated with him because he has a fascinating life. Absolutely. He clearly is very good at what he does.
That's what I like. Clearly, that's what I want to do is talk to people about their lives. And Steve Kerr has sui generis is a cliche almost, but no, his life is unbelievably unique. There's very few people that had the life he's had, and the background that he's had, and the upbringing he had. And it affects his, and I don't mean affects in, it changes it for a bad reason. It imparts wisdom on his life.
Yeah.
And he has a sense of what basketball really means.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that important, you know. And so whereas fans live their whole lives in pursuit of their team winning a championship, he understands that. No, literally people die, and you should deal with that more before you deal with basketball. It's not that important. Yeah.
Well, his father was killed by terrorists, right?
Assassinated, yes. Mm-hmm. And that when he was in college. And so that's the kind of thing I want to talk about. That's why it's adjacent to basketball. Doesn't mean basketball is not important. He's a very competitive person. He wants to win. Sure. He throws clipboards. He curses people out. But he understands it in the big picture.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. Come on. What are we talking about?
So do we find the podcast in all the usual places?
It's on theathletic.com.
Oh, excellent.
So please subscribe, and then you can listen to all the podcasts, just not just my crappy ones.
I will happily shill for The Athletic, because my daughter, Devin, who has very high standards about most things, some people just say she's obnoxious,
your daughter's
loves
delightful.
The Athletic. Loves it.
We're very glad.
Once a week, she forwards me something. Did you see this? Did you hear about this? She just loves it.
Yes.
And that says something. So if you've not read The Athletic,
we tell good stories.
Yeah.
We really do. We tell very good stories at The Athletic.
You got to do some hockey this year.
Oh, sure. I did hockey last year.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I don't want to pretend like I'm an expert in hockey. That's the worst thing you can do is pretend like you're an expert in something. So I don't, because there's lots of people who know way more about hockey than I do. So I want to just tell stories about guys that play hockey.
Yeah. Excellent. From the sublime to the ridiculous. I saw somebody at the door. Is that Michael?
No. It's Claude.
Oh, Claude's back. Good. Okay. We like Claude just as much.
Yes.
Okay. From the sublime to the ridiculous, because I have thought for a long time Handmaid's Tale is ridiculous. I did not read it when it came out, Jeannie. And I only read it years later when my kids were forced to read it in school. Because kids go to school these days, all they're allowed to read is just this dreadful dystopian crap. So I read it and thought, okay, this is terrible. But the long-awaited sequel, The Testaments, is now out. Accidentally released by Amazon. Thank you, Ron Charles. Accidentally, haha. The predictions of it are enormous. But, okay, first of all, who were on the table? Who read Handmaid's Tale?
Yeah.
Nobody. No. Claude, ever? Handmaid's Tale?
No. Not my genre.
Marcellus, ever? Never.
I will tell you this. When it came out in 1985, this is how long ago that was.
Yeah.
I got it as a Book of the Month Club.
Nice.
Where it sat on a shelf.
Yeah.
For 10, 20, 30 years.
Exactly.
I can't read dystopian literature. I love dystopian movies, but I can't read dystopian literature.
And it has become something so much bigger than the book. First of all, 8 million copies sold, which is a lot.
This latest.
No. We don't know yet on the sequel, but we're going to make predictions on the sequel, and then there'll be a prize to whoever comes closest without going over. it's more than a book now. And how do we feel about this? I know how I feel about it, but it's more than a book. It's a Halloween costume. It's people dressed up in protests on Capitol Hill. It's Leslie Jones, who is pretty funny.
She was great.
But how do we feel about it being more than a book, David?
It's fine. It's not for me, but it's fine. I understand that people, anybody who gets people reading, I'm fine with. It's okay. I would rather, I'm not a big dystopian person either, Jeannie, but my son is. That's weird. Mm-hmm. So I suspect that young people will love this book, will love the sequel.
The Testaments is 15 years later. There's a different voice. The narrator is a different voice. The interviews, Margaret, I think if we'd called Margaret Atwood and said we wanted her on the show, she would have come on. She's done an interview with everybody. Right. She's done like the AKC Dog of the Month Club newsletter. She has done an interview with them. And she's very feisty because they try so hard, of course, to drag her into saying something about the Trump administration, and isn't because of the Trump administration. She stays away from it adamantly. But what about sequels? How do we feel about sequels in general? This has echoes of Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, Harper Lee.
Harper Lee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's just say that Hulu has already bought the sequel for the fourth season of The Handmaid's Tale, which they were just, I guess, running out of juice on. I have not watched that on Hulu either. But I do wonder if the whole Me Too movement has helped propel that book and the Hulu series as well.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden just that, you know, sexism in extremis was appropriate or was more watchable than it might have been 5-10 years ago.
Yeah. If Michael were here, I think Michael would go on 20 minutes about just all the things we didn't realize about this book and how important it is. Mm-hmm. But I remember one of my kids was in 9th grade and they're reading that. And I just thought, come on. Is this the best we can do for $40,000 a year? This is going to be the number one most important book of the year? Come on. It drives me crazy. Okay.
Well, there's a Mad Max sequel, the most recent one. I can't remember the exact name of it.
That's great.
Charlize Theron is starring. She's fantastic. She plays this one-armed, you know, just killer woman. But it's got lots of aspects of Handmaid's Tale in it, like women just being breeding grounds and stuff like that, which was to me, fantastic movie, and I'm happy to watch that, but I don't want to watch Handmaid's Tale.
Reading about it, I started to read about all these. They're clearly just ripping off Handmaid's Tale. Lots of Netflix, lots of Hulu. And they'll say, oh, it's not Handmaid's Tale, but you know, women dressed in red with strange bonnets on. Wow, it's just that again. So I think there are lots of copycats, just like a lot of people after Hamilton. A lot of people tried to do the same kind of thing.
Right. Yes.
Remember, what was the Jimmy Buffett one?
Is that Polk?
Jimmy Buffett. Yeah. Jimmy Buffett tried it, and he said everybody's trying to do the next Hamilton, which it just doesn't happen. Okay, predictions. If Handmaid's Tale sold 8 million copies, how many will this sell? Jeannie, pick a number without going over. Well, whoever the one that comes closest without going over.
Are we talking like the next year or 5 years? Or I hate to nitpick here, but like.
Such an editor.
She's so competitive.
Yeah, really, so competitive.
In the next year, 3 million.
Okay, David?
6.
In a year?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, Liz?
1.5.
Wow, really?
Well, I'm so uninformed, but I'm thinking, a big part of my thinking is that people don't read as much now as they did 15 years ago. So even if it were equally successful, the number would be markedly down.
Okay. But I think
I'm just fairly bleak about the whole state of everything.
I think they might buy books
wine for Liz.
Because I think they might buy books because they feel it's important to have this book on your shelf or on your coffee table or something.
That's funny. It's a design element.
Yes.
Or just as like, I'm into the estimate.
Hold that. That's going to be a great segue to your segment on the bestseller list. Claude Marcel are going, oh my God, get off the Handmaid's Tale, ladies, please. Do you guys have predictions on how many copies sell, Marcel, in 1 year?
Not at all.
Not at all. Doesn't want to lose. And Claude walks out of the building.
Claude is literally walking out of the room.
I'm going with 2.5. Okay.
Interesting. So we're more aligned a little bit.
Yeah. So last week or 10 days ago, Jeannie and I are kicking around ideas for segments and things like that. And by the way, to all of those who are listening, send us ideas, author segments.
Complaints?
We love all sorts of things. Complaints, exactly. Not about the intro to the show, which will be changing soon. I got a lot of complaints
really?
About that. Yeah, didn't
about
like
the
it.
What?
Didn't the intro to the show? Didn't like it. Changing it. But I look at the bestseller list every week, just I think I should. And on the nonfiction, I always see this book, Sapiens. Have you all ever picked up this book?
No.
Don't waste the money.
Really?
It is one of those books. It's like Guns, Germs, and Steel. Remember that one, Jeannie?
Which we said we would never.
Where people, I think, read about Sapiens, the history of mankind, blah, 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 and they see it. It looks very smart and very serious, and they buy it, saying, this will look good on my bookshelf.
I see what you mean.
I promise you, it's on that. Two-thirds of the people who bought that book never read it, or they read the first chapter and said, death, and put it away. I am struck by the ones that stay on those lists forever, like Educated, and Tara Westover, she claims it's nonfiction. I think it's fiction. But I was getting very snarky about the bestseller list, and Jeannie talked me off the ledge, and she said, I think there's an interesting niche in the bestseller list. Jeannie,
in the bestseller paperback list in the Washington Post, not this Sunday, but the Sunday before,
right?
The top seller was The Goldfinch, which was originally published in 2013.
Which was your book report?
Then Beloved, 1987. Mm-hmm. Then The Bluest Eye, 1970. Then The Great Gatsby, 1925. Then To Kill a Mockingbird, 1960. Then The Art of Racing in the Rain, relatively contemporary, 2008. Then Little Fires Everywhere, which is much more recent, maybe 2 or 3 years old. Mm-hmm. Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, 2017. The Handmaid's Tale, of course, 1985. Of course. So some of these books are years old.
Very old.
And why are they still on the bestseller list? Well, The Goldfinch makes sense because there's going to be a movie about it opening this week, actually.
Mm-hmm. Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman. It's already getting panned, I'm sorry to
say. Oh, no.
Oh, really?
And Beloved and The Bluest Eye makes sense because, of course, they're Toni Morrison's work. Mm-hmm. Great Gatsby, I don't get that now. I don't get
Could
it.
Could it be just the advent of colleges and it's
begins
the reading list for every
And I think that could be the case. Well, To Kill a Mockingbird, I think it
and that's
could,
also
could,
a play that
could be that
right. Broadway, To Kill a Mockingbird is definitely because of the play.
Yes. Right.
And every time if they still the New York Times full page ads, which still cost money in the print editions, full page ads for To Kill a Mockingbird for the play.
Yeah.
And then there's also, let's see, I've lost it off my list, I think, but Kindred is another one that, Kindred, yes, by Octavia Butler, 1979 book, which is another book that is on many high school and college reading lists. Again, about race. But here's another interesting thing about this list. Everything on this list, except The Bluest Eye, has at least one movie or TV production about it.
Right.
And in The Great Gatsby's case, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movie versions.
Is that right?
Holy cow. Yes. No idea.
There was a silent film of The Great Gatsby, if you can believe that, in 1926. I don't think maybe Kindred might not have a TV or film about, but
probably will soon.
And a couple are Reese Witherspoon productions or in the hopper. Little Fires Everywhere is going to be done by Reese Witherspoon, and I think Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. Also. Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, if and of course we know about Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
And I thought if you're a writer, well, let's just kind of think about if you want that one book to kind of live forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know. Morph into many more valuable assets. You just write it to get it on that list and have Reese Witherspoon or somebody.
Well, one of our authors that we've had on the show, and I don't see her book here, was telling me, and I won't say which one, was telling me when she first started writing her book and she was sharing it with some publishers and there was some interest, they immediately started having conversations with her. Well, you have to write this so when we do the Netflix movie. Series, when we do the movie, those kinds of things. A couple of things. I'm pretty sure, I'm looking at Miracle Creek by Angie Kim. She was amazing. I'm pretty sure that's being made into
She said it was.
She said there was some interest. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And David, since you're now into podcast land in three or four different ways, the movie's got to be next. You can't think just about... No, it's true. And Claude and I have talked about how this show, eventually, all the things... Podcasts, I think, are just one little segment in the media landscape.
Oh,
and I
sure.
think it's all evolving
content,
into
content,
other things.
Content, sure.
content, 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 but increasingly video.
Yes.
Increasingly video. Yes. When I hear something I've never heard of before, you know, something about aardvarks. I go to my Google machine and I type in the word aardvark, and then I remember, oh no, two A's. And then up pop words about aardvarks, and then I hit images, so I get the aardvarks, right? Mm-hmm. If one of my 20-something kids hears something about aardvarks, they go right to YouTube.
Yeah.
Oh, or they sure. go to Insta, or they go to, and yeah, now yeah. there's Finsta and Insta, and it's very confusing. But they go immediately to video. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't even occur to them.
That's right.
Because it's all visual. Yeah.
Visual first, always.
So yeah. comma is going to have to become
oh, sure.
visual pretty soon.
Fortunately, I have some experience in television.
Just a wee bit.
Just well, you know, this total aside, I was watching the Nats game the other day. I think it was the one that was on YouTube. And, of course, the Baby Shark's walk-up song
so great.
Came on. And one of the announcers said that that Baby Shark YouTube has 3 billion mm-hmm.
Totally believe it.
Hits.
Oh, sure.
Totally believe it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ryan and I went to a game last week, and it was very last minute and nice people. Anyways, we had really good seats. Right there. And even though there's the net, though, I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, I'm going to get hit. I'm going to get hit. Mm-hmm. But we did the Baby Shark thing, of course, yeah. right? And I'm getting texts from friends of mine going, oh, my God, stop that. You look like a moron because they're watching on TV.
I see you. Yeah. I watched that game. I yes. didn't see you.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I'd known you were there.
Love Baby Shark.
Yeah, I do, too.
I think it's fabulous. Baby Shark should be on the bestseller list.
It's an earworm.
Jeannie, were you surprised about something that wasn't on there when you saw all these classics hanging in there?
Gosh, I hadn't thought about that. No, I guess not.
I'm surprised Great Gatsby, because all of them, I think it's because of the TV, the movies. Mm-hmm. I think this gives them another life. Toni Morrison, obvious, but sure. all those things give them another leg. But Great Gatsby.
It seems so outworn and yeah. archaic now, doesn't mm-hmm. it? I'm just reaching here, but I just wondered if there was something Trumpian about Great Gatsby, that, you know, the light at the end of the pier. I don't know. I just...
No,
that whole nothing. Lifestyle nothing. Thing. Okay.
Okay, we like that. And Jeannie talked me off the ledge from hating the bestseller list. By the way, I was talking, a nice person at a publishing house recently was trying to get us to have a particular author on. And I said, not really our cup of tea. Very political. Mm. Very hard over political. Yeah. I said, you know, not really our cup of tea. And she said, so you never do anybody political? And I said, well, Michelle Obama, anytime.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yes, we'll
do a special show.
Love her.
Special snacks. Okay. Thank you, Jeannie. Okay, we're going to take a little break here, and we're going to call up Zach down south and come back soon. We are back, Chatter on Books, and we're very lucky in one sense in that we get to talk to Zach Powers about his great book, First Cosmic Velocity. But Zach, who is from Savannah originally, has had some family issues, and he's been dealing with Dorian, that terrible hurricane down there. So first off, Zach, we wish you were here, but we're glad we get you on the phone. Are you on dry land? Is everybody okay? That's what's important.
Yeah, I mean, everything's fine here. Dorian did not really affect us at all. The last minute we decided not even to leave the places. Me and my brother are down here. We decided to not leave the houses we were staying in, and so rode out the storm, and there was not much rain and only a little bit more wind. So Savannah was mostly spared.
It's not quite as good as Alabama, but good. All right. Well, we love on this show, we love to ask authors about their childhoods. And I have to ask you, based on this book, you wrote a book about space program. Did you want to be an astronaut when you were a little boy?
Or a cosmonaut.
You know, I don't think I guess I knew what a cosmonaut was. I did not. It came from childhood in as much as my brother is now an aerospace engineer.
Oh, there we go.
I was an older brother. And so growing up, like, every space shuttle launch was, CNN was pulled up for every space shuttle launch. I actually confirmed with him after the fact that I believe she would skip days in school when there was a shuttle launch during the day so he could watch. Later on, when the technology, plus he would have software on his computer that would track the orbit of the space shuttle when it was on missions, as well as pretty much any other satellite other than top secret ones that you could name. Growing up, the space influence was there.
Hey, Zach, I hate to say this, but I think we're going to have to wait till you're back in town so we could have you in person. Because it's a real, no, we no, really, no, it's no. a, wanted, it's a really, we sat here before the show talking about your book. It's really
it's
wonderful.
Fantastic.
It's really remarkable in so many ways. And we
so
really want to talk to you about it. So we're going to.
I'm really sorry, I couldn't find the landlines. I called every relative I have in town and no one has the landline.
It's okay.
That kind of makes sense.
No,
and I feel terrible. I know.
It's
and I feel.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel badly that we put you under this much pressure as it is. But thank you for trying. And we
sorry,
will.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have you. Yeah. You're right up the road from us, or you're right up the road from the undisclosed location. So when you're back in town. let me know, and we'll have you on, okay? Because we really want to talk about your book.
Great. I'm driving back tomorrow afternoon, so I'll be back anytime after that.
Okay, great. Drive
I'll be coming
safe.
Down here some, sure.
Well, all right, yeah.
Thank you.
Liz Clark is here horning up your time anyhow, so we'll take some of hers next week. All right. Be safe, Zach. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye. Okay, that was Zach Powers. And that I feel bad. It really probably put too much pressure on him. He did reach me about 5 or 6 days ago saying, hey, I've got this going on. It could be tough. And I said, no worries. We'll play hurricanes. It by ear. If you can join us, you can join us. And yeah, hurricanes are real.
Right.
People were in danger. It's for real. But let's give, and I really will try to get him on the show. Yes. First Cosmic Velocity, as we were saying before the show, I expected to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to read it. And David, your thoughts?
I was stunned how much I was interested in this book.
So, Liz, you did not have this on your required reading list. It's about the Soviet space program in the 50s and 60s.
Right. Okay. From the Soviet perspective.
From the Soviet perspective, and they have 5 successful launches, but they really didn't. And the cosmonauts they shot up never came back. And the reason the world didn't know is because they found a bunch of sets of twins. And they would send one twin up, who would never come back.
Is this the fiction part of
this
the book?
This is the, well, it's a novel.
Yes, but,
novel.
Doesn't it seem completely impossible?
Yes. I am so wrapped already.
Yes. It's amazing. It's a fun.
Oh,
it's
my gosh.
With everything going on with the Russians these days, this nuclear thing that went off a few weeks ago, as you're reading this book, you're thinking, and I found myself going to the Google machine several times.
When we do have Zach in person.
Yeah, let's talk about the questions we'll ask him.
No, the whole notion of lying, which is very appropriate in the times in which we live, but the whole notion that you could build an entire nation's philosophy on lies.
Yes.
Now, maybe, look, I'm not naive. I understand this country built a lot of its history on lies, but everything that happened, according to this book, is a lie. Everything, all of it is a lie. And I'm very curious about the notion of how a society comes to grips with the fact that everything, and they all know it's a lie, but they go along with it anyway,
this case. In this case, only 3 or 4 people were in on this lie. With the exception of the poor twins who didn't volunteer, who were conscripted, who were plucked out of the Ukraine or whatever and brought to Russia be in this program.
The Russians would go around, listen, find sets of twins and take them in the one set of twins, and you only know them by the same name, Leonid, for instance.
Right.
They only have one name.
Right.
And they'd take them from a desperately horrible situation, which they're all starving to death because there's a famine in Ukraine, and they get dragged out of there. So their grandmother, their only relative, is actually happy that they're going away because at least they'll eat.
Right.
But then they
get
dragged into this program.
Right.
Yeah.
And
fascinating.
It's really well written.
The whole
really
dynamic between the twins who are separated once they get there, but the one twin who knows he or she is staying behind, and the other twin who gets catapulted into space, fatally so, and then the twin who remains on the ground is paraded out with medals on his shoulder to get all this wonderful attention.
And they're trained and coached to say everything the way the returning cosmonaut would say it.
The stars are unbelievable. The Earth looks wonderful.
I was fascinated by the notion in the book that the first person that goes into space and has any deal of success is the female, Nadia. She becomes a global sensation.
On teacups. Everybody
has
the teacups.
All over the world, everybody's got the teacups. And I just thought that was a great it was a great touch, you know?
Ignatius. The Pravda-like correspondent.
Who is working for the government.
Working for the government,
I think KGB.
And then, listen, there's a whole thing because the dogs. And we all know the Soviets did indeed send dogs into space.
Laika was the first one.
Laika. So, again, as I'm reading this book, and I'm starting getting very confused, going, wait a minute, is this real? Is this fiction? And then I'm Googling things, and I thought I had remembered, and I did find on my Google machine, that Khrushchev and JFK had meetings and dinners together and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie Kennedy is sitting next to Khrushchev at some dinner. She's run out of every topic she can possibly think of, starts talking to him about dogs. Khrushchev sends the daughter, a puppy, of one of the primary cosmonaut dogs to the Kennedy family, and they had it. Yeah, yeah. Little Pushkin or something like that. Fluffy in Russian.
And in the book, there's a section where Khrushchev is in the book as an actual character in Khrushchev.
He says,
Kennedy used to send me good stuff, and Johnson doesn't send me anything.
And Khrushchev wants to send his dog Bialka, which I guess is Russian for squirrel, because this thing looks like a squirrel.
Right.
These scenes, so many of these books that I never would have read if it weren't for the show. I'm reading this one, and the images in your mind of who could play these parts.
Oh, yes.
Talk about being on the bestseller list and having a movie. This one seemed to me like a slam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What the two of the twins, Leonid and Nadia, they want to save their dog, their favorite dog.
Could Carrie Russell be in it?
Carrie Russell
could be Nadia. She could definitely be Nadia.
She could be Nadia.
She's too old to be Nadia.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
Ouch.
No, I'm sorry. She is.
Oh, really?
Claws, cow.
There were no cats
Ignatius.
In this book.
She
could be Ignatius. Yeah. Okay. But they're rummaging around slums trying to find a twin for Khrushchev's dog, but there's no other dog in the world that looks like the little squirrel dog. It was great.
But the thing that really struck me was how Zach seemed to be able to get into the minds of the Russians.
Yeah.
He just spoke in a Russian way, the way these autocrats thought and spoke and didn't have real names. There was the chief designer. There was a great designer. I mean, it just... We've got to talk to him about how.
Yeah.
We thought maybe he was an embedded spy or something.
In the mid-80s, I took a graduate course at Sice and a graduate course at Georgetown, so I are an expert on Russian studies.
Yeah.
And if I didn't know better, I would think this book was written by some Soviet dissident that got out in the late 80s because the voice of the inhumanity of the Soviet system, religion versus science.
The cold-heartedness.
Just remarkable. So, Zach, we loved it.
Yeah, so
it's really sad you're not here. More,
he gets more wine and snacks. Double bang for the
he bike. Does. He'll get to come back. He will. Liz, you will have to share your time with him next week.
Okay, that would be great. I'm sure I would be great. Just pale and
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Okay, now we're going to take a break again, and then we will come back with Deserted Island, which is taking a decidedly different turn.
Yes.
It's great. We are back. It's Chatter on Books. It's been a very interesting and unusual Chatter on Books.
That's the best guy.
It's like in Changing Seats. It's that Boz Skaggs song, Down Two Then Left. That was the name of the album, right? So did hear from Michael Kornheiser. For those of you who wonder where he is, he's on the ninth tee at a golf course right now, coaching his team.
God bless him.
Go Murray. We hope they're winning. Yeah, he's a big-time coach. And this is the Deserted Island segment, which, again, based on the feedback from Claire and friends, we can take this in many different directions. We do not have to take it in the same direction. So this week, I'm taking it in the direction of celebrities reading classics. And you say to yourself, why?
Reading an audio book, I mean, narrating?
Yes. Yeah, okay. And or when I tell my Eddie Izzard story.
Okay.
You can take this many different ways.
Okay.
So Brian and I went to Scotland for 7-8 days. We spent a few days on the coast hiking, which was great. And then we went to the Fringe, which is the greatest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And if you've never been to the Fringe in Edinburgh in August, put it on your bucket list.
Right. Oh, this is the arts.
Well, 300 years ago, the people of Edinburgh, I don't know how this worked, but 300 years ago, the people of Scotland led the world in philosophy and arts and literature.
They were the crucible of
culture. No reason why.
Right.
And it downhill ever since. But the Edinburgh Festival has been going on for over 300 years, and it's ballet and it's opera and all these things. And about, I think it's 40 plus years ago now, somebody said, too highfalutin for us, and they started what they called the Fringe, which was all sorts of different kinds of performances. And 24 years ago, when our son Colin was 3 months old, Brian and I stuck him in a backpack, and we went over to Scotland, and we went to the Fringe. And 24 years ago, the way you decided what you wanted to see at the Fringe, and it's all over Edinburgh, was every morning out in the streets would be these big broadsheets with little tiny, tiny, tiny print. And it just listed, long, long, long lists with not much categorization. Well, at 10 a.m., there are going to be 6 kids beating on garbage can lids.
Yeah.
On the corner at 12 noon, there's going to be a stand-up comedian in Mrs. Smith's basement, and it's just all this random stuff, phenomenal stuff. So we went back a couple of weeks ago, and it's just as phenomenal. It's even bigger. Of course, you can find everything online. There are 18 different ways you can search for what you want to see, comedy, music, all sorts of things. And we saw some really, really wild stuff. Some kids from a beatbox academy they did Frankenstein, The Making of Frankenstein, beatbox, hard to describe, but fabulous. Mm-hmm. But we saw on the list Eddie Izzard. Mm-hmm. And discriminating listeners and David will know Eddie Izzard.
Great.
Most famous 20 plus years ago, yeah, came out with a performance, The Executive Transvestite.
Yeah.
And he was not just a transvestite comedian, he was the executive transvestite. Very funny. So you see him on the list, and you go, oh, we got to go see Eddie. And we had to stand in line, which is great because you meet people in line. And you go into this wonderful little theater, which is part of the Edinburgh University, maybe 150 people, mm-hmm, 12 noon on a Saturday. Eddie comes out in a beautiful kilt, Chanel-like jacket, some very nice shoes.
That.
Nails were perfect. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he says is, okay, anybody who's here expecting to see me do my normal comedy, you should leave now. If you're a stag party, if you're a bridesmaid's party, get out now. We'll give your money back because that's not what I'm doing. And what he is going to do is read Great Expectations.
Wow.
And the reason he's going to read Great Expectations, he's dyslexic, read very little growing up. Mm-hmm. And then he's in his 50s now, and he's trying to read more and more. He found out that he and Charles Dickens share the same birthday, exactly 150 years apart.
Wow.
And so he decides, and he very emphatically declared this a work in progress, that he, as a tribute to Dickens, as something completely different, was going to read Great Expectations. And you could see some people sitting there. Again, it's 12 noon. The drinking had not fully yet kicked in Edinburgh. And they're kind of looking at each other, and Brian and I are looking at each other, and I said, okay, we'll be here for half an hour, and then we're out. Transfixed for 90 minutes.
Sure.
And I can't do justice to it, but he did so much justice to Great Expectations. I picked it up on the way home. I've got to read this again. It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So it got me thinking, Deserted Island can go lots of different ways. If you could pick a celebrity who would read any classic, what would it be? Jeannie?
I came up blank on this topic. I am sorry to say.
Oh, let's unwrap that. Why do you think you came up blank on this topic?
Because I can't imagine a celebrity being interested in a classic, frankly.
Oh, yeah. Jeannie is going after people on this show.
Come on. You know, wow. What do we think? Like Kim Kardashian is gonna read Proust?
Could happen.
I just kept banging up against certain images. I mean, there's smart celebrities like Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, I could see him reading something intelligent. Yeah. But I'm sorry, I just...
Okay.
It's totally blanked on
it's
this.
It's all right. It's okay, David.
But I did other homework.
You did.
Yeah. You did an excellent job in your segment. Show. Yeah.
Four words, Richard Pryor, Huckleberry Finn. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
my gosh.
Drop the mic.
Would you? I'd pay money to see that. I would pay to see that.
See, I think that the word of mouth at Edinburgh is people who got, he only did a handful of performances. Eddie Izzard only did a handful of performances. The word of mouth was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And people started, you cannot scalp tickets there.
Yeah.
But people were saying they would give a lot of money. I think with the right celebrity,
absolutely,
people would pay a lot. It could be a charity.
I was thinking of Robin Williams could read anything.
Yes.
For an hour and a half, and it would be fast. It would be incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But Richard Pryor and Huckleberry Finn? Are you kidding me? God.
Why has this not been thought of before? That's genius.
Oh, it's great.
Liz, I hate to say it, you have to try to top that.
I was just going to say, so this is a double whammy, as I was not, I didn't do my homework because I didn't expect to be here. And then to follow that is brutal. Yeah. So I can only play if I take a very broad definition of classics.
Yes.
So my favorite writer is Raymond Carver, the mm-hmm. short story writer. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it might be Will You Please Be Quiet, Please, or Cathedral, one of those two collections. Mm-hmm. I just love his shorts, and he's passed away now. So I would have Harvey Keitel read Raymond Carver.
That would be good.
That's good.
Because it's...
I was thinking... God, I've forgotten his name. Oh, come on, David. Oh, that's so good. Harvey Keitel, but...
I mean, it's just they're sad.
Yeah, Christopher Walken. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, stop.
I'm sorry. He's such a punchline. I cannot. All I can think is cowbell. You know, like no.
He would overdo.
No, he's just a poser.
Harvey Keitel.
The voice of a working man who is just like a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say life has been hard.
Right.
Life is hard for so many people, and that's the landscape that Carver wrote about. You know, the most pedestrian details of a day that's just gone south.
That's great.
So
can we
and
have
Liz I hear
on all the time.
Voice.
We can listen
no.
all the time.
Liz should be on every week.
All the time.
No. Yes. So I didn't really. It's not
you
really.
You just made
a plastic
the show so much better in 30 seconds. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And that I'm was the good. Only one who hasn't had wine.
Maybe we should take notes about that. That was fabulous. If anybody had any doubts that this show is truly organic, it's interesting. We're talking to some people over August. I talked to a lot of people who listened to the show, Claire again and friends. Thank you. Did some focus groups, did some survey work. And it was really interesting because the most powerful thing is people like that, and they just kept using the word organic. The show just flows. Mm-hmm. It just goes. Mm. So we go, even when our featured authors don't arrive, and even when Michael's stuck in a golf tee, and Liz shows up a week early. It's fabulous.
Outstanding. But Liz, it's the best podcast.
Thank you for being here.
That's how excited I was to be invited. I'm a week early.
That is just great. Okay, we're going to wrap it up here. A little housekeeping. Everybody, please listen, download, review us. Those iTunes reviews, I don't know where you do that or how you do it, but if you do it and you do it nicely, it makes a difference. Do send ideas, suggestions, complaints, concerns to info@chatterandbooks.com. Thank you to Jeannie and David and Liz and Marcellus and Claude coming and going. Claude went to try to find Michael on the golf tee somewhere. But thanks to everybody for being here.
And who do we have next week?
Who is it?
Who's coming next
sorry,
week?
Sorry, I put you on the spot. Never mind.
Yeah, I can see her. I just can't think of the name. This is so great.
It's like she's an apparition.
Yes. It's almost
my
as if she's
laugh. Oh my God.
Oh my God. So next week, we do have Liz Clark, who, as I had written in my notes, just an incredible journalist. Liz, we followed you day by day by day. We all talked about you where you're gone for months in Europe.
Thank you.
Phenomenal amount of work. You love beagles, which we all love dogs. Beagles, we have to ask you about. Bruce Springsteen. And your book, everyone should read this. One Hell of a Ride, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
NASCAR Swept the Nation, and I really mean this, a lot of people, Hillbilly Elegy, the classic, oh my God, why did the country go the way it's gone, and these kinds of things. I think people should go back and read this book. So we will talk to you about that at length next week, and thank you for coming back twice. Can't get too many authors ever to come back. You're so nice. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, and we will see you next week. Bye.